garage chair, maybe. I mean, is that something that has been a concern for other cities? That's why they wrote it into the Senate bill.
I think the services, there may be a reason. I haven't gone to the legislative history specifically on SB 946 to look at the services requirement, but I can think of all sorts of types of services that might be inappropriate for street and sidewalk vending. If you had, for example, a mobile tattoo, that wouldn't take up much space, but there may be some health and safety reasons why you don't want someone outside of a tattoo establishment doing that. That might be endangering the people because of airborne dust and so on getting into a tattoo. That's one of the situations I could think of. But without going back to the legislative history to determine what the legislature was looking at in that, I wouldn't be able to tell you off the top of my head.
And in terms of serving hot food or prepared food or anything like that, we have farmers markets that are in county incorporated areas, like, say, for instance, Baywood, or areas where they're under the purview of the county, or we have our own farmers market here, or we have the Tamale Festival here, where people are serving prepared food out of a... Are the requirements for something like that, when it has a confined area, like a parameter of this is the farmers market boundary, this is the festival boundary, does the county see that as a different than a street vendor? Because there's no hand washing stations per se at these tamale stands or these farmers market stands that are serving food, like soup, you know, the great soup vendor, different areas. So what's the difference there? And would it be the same kind of requirement? Then how difficult would be the process to go the same route as a tamale vendor at the festival in terms of county health?
Yeah, I think as far as there are a little bit different types of businesses, and there is a provision in SB 946 that says you can prohibit them, these small businesses near certified farmers markets. But as far as the Tamale Festival, I look at that more like a special event, and you may be renting out or reserving the entire area around Sunken Gardens for the event, where you would be able to restrict businesses from just moving in with their carts.
Sorry, let me clarify.
Yeah.
The actual tamale vendor themselves operating in the festival, health code reason, with the same requirements as if they were a standalone on the corner of El Camino Real, or operating within the festival. The one, let's say, for instance, the one vendor inside the festival, does the county look at that and say the health requirements for that are the same as a street vendor?
I think those would be different in that situation. I think the county would have a greater regulatory authority over that, as would the city, because it's a different type of business than you're looking at for SB 946 purposes. When I think of SB 946, I'm thinking of literally the push cart. I'm thinking of a very small business that is not, it's not a $150,000 catering truck with a full kitchen and exhaust hoods and so on. It's more intended to be an entry level type business. And that's what the legislative analysis or statement of reasons that the legislature put was, to foster basically these small businesses to allow people to get a part of the American dream, so to speak.
Final question that's like a yes or no answer. For any staff, if you're not using a push cart that is 25 square feet and you are operating a food currently under the current rules or whatever, we don't have framework wise, is it difficult to operate a taco stand in Atascadero under the current guidelines from the county? Would it be very difficult to find a place to do that as it currently stands?
Yeah.
That's maybe subjective, but...
Councilmember Peake, it's not difficult. I think we have multiple of those trucks that operate on private properties throughout the city. And those food trucks that operate like that, they're pre-certified by county health. They have all the appurtenances inside. And for example, the one that operates, there's multiple that operate behind Ancient Owl on weekends and other businesses. And there's a lot of locations where they can do that on these private properties. And that's very different than the instrument we're talking about this evening here.
That's what I'm talking about.
Pretty easy. Yeah.
Just opening up on the side of the sidewalk is what we're kind of talking about.
Down a sidewalk, like the guys that have the cut fruit and they're standing on the sidewalk.
I think we're talking about, The two incidences are taco stands that were easy up tents. That's what we're talking about. We're not talking about the fruit stand wheelie guy or the guy behind Ancient Owl. That's what I'm trying to see. Like, there's much ado about nothing for two taco stands when you have all these other opportunities that people are taking advantage of legally. I guess that was my, is it difficult to do a standalone, not on wheels food stand in the city limits?
We don't currently have any regulations.
Yeah, we don't have any regulations. So I would say, not that it's easy, obviously there's a business investment, but there's no overarching administrative or regulatory scheme that the city would go and use to enforce against that. So I guess to answer your question in a short way, maybe a little longer than a yes or no, is no, it's not hard.
Right. I mean, we don't have any regulations, so you could literally show up tomorrow with your cart and try to sell prepackaged food.
Yeah. You know, without an ordinance, we don't have the ability to enforce.
Right. So I have several questions for you, and some of them sort of relate to questions that other members have asked. So in terms of the timeliness here, they did change some of the law effective January of 26. But otherwise, in terms of what Councilmember Funk asked about, we're not under a time pressure to do this. And clearly, we don't have a current significant growth in this kind of activity that, oh, my God, we better do something about it. So we have time to give you guidance for you guys to come back with something. Right. Because
absolutely.
I think what Councilmember Peake's getting at is, you know, we had a few incidences with particular taco vendors, you know, certainly exceeding 25 square feet, et cetera. But we don't have this huge onslaught of, you know, vendor after vendor opening up.
Sure. So, it's a council decision. You could take the approach that if it's not broke, don't fix it. You're not obligated to draft an ordinance like this. It's just because this was brought up because of the two taco events. We looked at it and said, okay, well, here's an opportunity to regulate if the council wishes to do so. If the council wishes to do so, we want to get direction. If the council decides, and that's one of the opportunities or the alternatives, is just let it go and it's not a problem, where we don't need this ordinance, that's an acceptable policy decision as well.
Right. And I see, you know, having a framework for the future is good, and just seeing that there's not a huge rush to do this. And speaking of, you know, the potential here, I'm interested in the concept of competition here, because if you know, if we have a tamale festival going on in this certain area, and then somebody half a block away say, hey, this is a great time for me to set up my tamale cart. and that's why I think, you know, like in Pismo, they have no, you know, not within 500 feet of an existing farmer's market or of a special event, that sort of thing. But also, you know, there's a sidewalk on San Anselmo in front of Susie's Kitchen, so I could set up and sell a competing product right out in front of this vendor who, you know, pays rent, et cetera, et cetera. Unless we, and I don't know if we could, but could we say you can't set up and sell tacos in front of a taco stand or and I realize that you said, like you said, to some degree, this is, hey, we're supporting the American dream, to where you start out with a push cart and you end up with a taco truck, and then you end up with a business, you know, with a brick and mortar business. But of course, if now you're the brick and mortar business, you may not see it that way.
Yeah, I think it tips over unless you tie it to one of those health safety standards. The regulation of business is probably not going to be one of those standards. There is a provision in SB 946 that says a local authority can't require a sidewalk vendor to obtain consent of a non-governmental entity or individual before they can sell. So that would be kind of in the same vein, that you're trying to get permission from the brick and mortar business to conduct business in front of them. So I think that'd be a little more difficult.
Jan. But clearly they would on private property, like the Vaughn's question. And then in terms of sidewalks, I was thinking sidewalks, but then one member asked about, you know, the sidewalks in the park. So that is to say that somebody could set up on one of the pathways leading through the middle of Sunken Gardens.
Yep.
Unless we, for yep. some safety reason, said that was not an appropriate place.
Correct.
And they could do so anytime they see a gathering of people. It's like, I'm going to, you know, pedal my ice cream cart over there or whatever and do that.
Yes.
And then speaking of that, all of these ordinances and premises being that these folks can do this, but they still have to get a city permit.
That's correct.
And, you know, and as part of the permitting process, all of them required, in, you know, liability insurance, naming the city as an additional insured, et cetera, so that when, you know, their customer line blocks the sidewalk or somebody trips or whatever. I'm curious, and maybe this is a question for our administrative services finance director, is has any strawberry vendor, strawberry strand vendor, you know, cart vendor come in for a permit, for a business license even, I should say, at any time you can recall?
I am not aware of one that it might also be something that Community Development Director Dunsmore might know about, but it hasn't come to my attention in my department.
And then typically here, they should have a business license as well, right?
Anyone doing business in the city essentially requires a business license, whether it's a one-day business or a one-year business.
But as a practical matter, I mean, I try to buy my strawberries at the farmer's market, but I have occasionally, you know, partaken in the other places. What I'm hearing is none of them have gotten a license and none of them have gotten a permit.
That I was not aware of. None of them have a license?
I am not aware of ones that have. They may have, but they have not come to my
understand. I mean, I'm not expecting that the answer would be yes. Just pointing out that, you know, we're talking about something that in practical terms just isn't happening. The other thing in this setup from the other places, they talk about this is not allowed in residential neighborhoods. So that is to say that the stand that I occasionally see at the corner of Portola and Santa Lucia would not be allowed under this kind of
So there's a difference on the residential. You can prohibit stationary sidewalk vendors in a residential. You can't prohibit the mobile ones where they're moving. So if it's a push cart, it's okay. If they're setting up a stand in a residential, you can prohibit that.
Understand, but I mean, somebody doing a pop up at a table in a residential neighborhood is not what's envisioned here. Although, you know, again, Tascadero has some wide corners, and I'm wondering, you know, from a practical standpoint, if you require a permit and insurance, whether anybody would actually, you know, do it. Some of these ordinances require $1 million in, you know, liability and policy, and that seems like a great deal. Okay, and I'll get back to the other council members. I just, you know, wonder how practical that is. Oh, the other question is the new change in legislation, January of 2026, says you can't do a criminal background history on these individuals. I understand, you know, in California, the provisions regarding you don't want to look into somebody's immigration status, that's not relevant to them operating the business, and you don't want that information used somewhere else. But I am concerned to say that, you know, I could set up, or somebody could set up in the Sunken Gardens, and so, you know, whatever is hot with junior high kids nowadays, and happen to be you know, a registered sex offender who lives in another city who is not, you know, registered with our police department. That's an extreme example, but that would be, you could never, you know, ask when they got their, if they got their permit, you would not be able to ask them about their criminal history, or not ask them, but run a background check for them.
That's correct. And that is one of the limitations of the new law that's from the state. But if you look at the regulatory burden that the city has regarding doing criminal background investigations of any other kinds of businesses, there's a limited subset of businesses where that's the case. So the legislature has drawn that line for cities.
Okay. All right. I just seem that sometimes the state goes a little overboard on certain things and limiting your ability. Okay. I'm going to go back and know Councilmember Funk had another question. Did I hear Councilmember Peek or had another question? Nope. No, nothing over here. Okay. Go ahead, Councilmember Funk.
Yeah. Thanks. So, I wanted to circle back and what does this do to your typical kid lemonade stand? If, you know, the kid wants to do a lemonade stand on the sidewalk in front of their house, are we now saying that you have to have a health department would be a permit and a business license and all of that stuff?
It's certainly something that could be encompassed within the regulation. I would say that that's not practical, nor is it likely to happen that we would be going and enforcing against someone who's got a lemonade stand set up there. But if you go with a very technical reading, that may be considered a fixed location in a residential zone. You do have the power to prohibit it. But when the difficulty that you get is in differentiating between the types of businesses, so to speak. And that's a situation where you may be able to differentiate and say that the primary purpose is not for commercial gain. It's something that's of a different sort. And we could take a look and see if there are other ordinances that have dealt with the lemonade stand.
Yeah, I mean, we need to be able to not get too carried away with this.
Suffice
here.
It to say, we're not.
I am not advocating regulating lemonade stands. Believe me. What I'm trying to do is, if we're trying to, can we do something that manages to prevent taco takeover? Something large that takes over space and creates safety hazards without creating practical issues for abilities to have. For our junior CEOs to sell their grandma's cookie recipe and nobody to get too fussed about that, whether they're doing that, on a table in front of their house or, at Paloma Park during the soccer games or, whatever. We need to be able to allow some flexibility for small-scale entrepreneurship. Unless there's some compelling reason not to. I want to ask two other things about, can we restrict based on concurrence with events? So, you can't do this during major city events, because the Tamale Festival, say, has certain aspects of downtown that the Sunken Gardens itself, but the sidewalks outside and around Sunken Gardens, leading to Sunken Gardens, across the street from Sunken Gardens, etc., would all be still sidewalks. They're not rented to the Tamale Festival.
Pismo Beach does it exactly that. It says right there, you can't do it within 500 feet of a special event. So I think very clearly you have a special event.
Yeah.
We don't allow such vending in the area. In the vicinity.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there are provisions in SB 946 that allow that.
Okay. So we can do that on a time specific basis. And then when we're looking at sidewalks versus parks, how do our plazas get classified? I'm thinking of our El Camino Plaza and our Centennial Park Plaza. Centennial Park Plaza area eventually is going to be smaller and have building around it, but certainly their plaza by the pedestrian tunnel is a city-owned plaza that we created to have a public space where lots of activities can occur.
I think the use of sidewalk in the legislation is the legislature's word. I look at it more in kind of public property. So I would include plazas within the regulation. I would include some other types of public property because I think we do have the power to do that. But I think the legislature just called it sidewalk vendors because that's what typically the vendors are using for their businesses.
Okay. So if we wanted to not include those spaces, we would need to be very specific in the legislation.
Correct.
About defining what is a sidewalk.
Yeah. For example, Pismo Beach's pier. They don't allow sidewalk vendors on the pier, even though it's not a sidewalk. There are two reasons for that. Congestion on a summer day, and they do have exclusive vendors on the pier that have had to go through a specific process to do that. So that would be an example of a public area that's not a sidewalk.
Sure. And, we could just be attentive to where this creates traffic, foot traffic issues, like as we heard with our senior center, those things can be very challenging, even if it doesn't technically block something. Okay, thank you.
Okay, seeing no other questions from council, I want to open this up to public comment.
Good evening, Council. Jeff Oslin, business owner, resident, concerned citizen of our town. I think this is really a simple way to do this. There's two issues at hand. One would be the small vendor with a cart of whatever that square footage is. And if you have a special event, then you have whatever rule you want in place. Because in a special event that's already fenced off and contained, you can't be in there without a permit. So if it's a tamale festival, you can't be in that area unless you have rented your booth space. No different than the wine deal in the park or any of that stuff. So that's a simple one that's fixed. The next part of this is the small one, what you do with regulation, you do. It doesn't matter. It's the larger one. If you set up some type of a food vending establishment on private property, i.e. the Walmart or Kmart parking lot, the old Kmart, they're on private property. What can we do to enforce that so our residents and those in town don't get sick because they don't have a health permit, don't have a business permit, and they're operating illegally with a 20-foot structure with flames shooting up in our town that we're supposedly concerned about fire? How do you regulate that? I would like to see Chief Suttle's explanation because I know he had to do a lot of research to figure out how to go after those folks. That is a bigger issue. When it comes to Kiwanis or Rotary or anything else, we all operate under permits. If you're doing Tuesday in the park, you're under a permit already. You've already reserved that area. You're under a permit. It's a non-issue. When you're doing the music in the park on a Saturday, it's a non-issue. You have three vendors that are allowed or whatever is contracted with your food vendors and your beer vendor or whatever. You can't operate. It's already been designated the area. So that's that. When we're picking on folks like the fruit stand, because I do own property in this city, I'm going to make this absolutely clear. My tenant on my property has a health permit from the County of San Luis Obispo, is insured, and insures me as well. Also has a Paso Robles and a County of San Luis Obispo and a Atascadero permit to be able to sell his or her fruits and vegetables on the property and is not impeding the public right away. The other thing is that you brought up was the intersections. You cannot vend, period, on Caltrans right away. If that happens, the highway patrol are responsible to move it. I do have a letter from Caltrans that was sent to somebody and they were illegal and I said, no, you can't do it. The CHP will handle it. So I think you have to look at those options and come up with two vendors. And I know I'm out of time, but my last point on this is if you're a brick and mortar and you're a restaurant in this town or any type of vendor in this town, but restaurant particular, you're paying permits, you have health inspections and everything else. You need to be enforcing this. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. I wondered about Caltrans permits because I sometimes will buy strawberries from the guy on the corner of San Gabriel and Highway 41. They seem to be there on a very regular basis. And it made me wonder, reading this report, whether or not Caltrans, you know, I assume they have the authority to regulate that, but I also gather that's something they rarely, if ever, do.
I think it's probably the latter, that they rarely, if ever, do. Certainly, I could see an argument that SB 946 applies to the state as well as local agencies, and so that sidewalk vending might be permitted, notwithstanding. But SB 946 was more designated to apply to local government agencies, and so that's really what I've focused on.
Right. Okay, so seeing no one else public wishing to speak, I'm going to bring it back to council for discussion and to provide guidance to staff. Council or Mayor Pro Tem Daris, go ahead for the question.
With respect to what Mr. Oslin said about if somebody was to set up, let's just use the case of that individual that was setting up that pretty extensive, he did a big fire going, all that kind of stuff. If he was in the middle of the Kmart property with permission from the owner of that property, we can still go in and ask him if he's got all the proper paperwork, even though he's on private property. Is that correct?
If there's some probable cause to believe that there's a violation of an ordinance or other law, certainly we've got that power. We can't just walk up and start saying, okay, well, we're going to ask you all these questions. But if you saw a 20-foot flame jumping up, the fire chief would presumably say, okay, do you have the necessary fire extinguishing equipment here?
Okay, because you just brought up something that probable cause. We haven't used that word this entire evening. So now let's go back to the sidewalk where somebody sets up, and do law enforcement have the right to stop and ask them just rent? Do you have the proper paperwork to be here?
If they believe that there is a basis that they can point to that someone does not have the appropriate permits, it would be like walking in to anything along Entrada or along Traffic Way to the businesses and the police walking in and saying, we want to see all your paperwork. There's got to be a standard there for the police officers to use in enforcing the law, and probable cause is typically that one. But if you have someone who pops up in a different place every night, then there might be a reason to take a look and say, okay, do you have your permits? Why are you moving around every night? Are you trying to avoid having to register with the city for a business license? There may be a basis to ask in that situation.
Because that's interesting, because now probable cause throws a whole nother dimension into it and does make it difficult to enforce or to at least approach and inquire what authority or what right they have to be where they're at. So that is something I didn't even consider. I just kind of thought that the police have the right to say, well, we see a vendor, I don't get a memo every day on all the vendors in the city, so I'm just going to simply ask, do you have your paperwork? I mean, that's not, so you can't legally do that.
Well, it would be the same as the police just pulling over everyone to see their driver's license. That's not something that the police are allowed to do. They've got to have a broken taillight. They've got to have some other reason to stop you for that. So there's got to be some basis for the stop.
All right. Thank you.
Along those lines, though, I mean, using the Kmart parking lot as a good example of, seemingly readily available, right? And maybe they, in most cases, somebody doing something there probably didn't get the permission of the owner, but let's say they did. They can't just set up a, mobile oil change service in the Kmart parking lot. Maybe a car detailing operation where they're using lots of, chemicals and cleaners or whatever. In other words, businesses, we're not trying to stifle business activity, but most businesses' activity require a particular license or permit to operate, where the city has reviewed what is it you're going to do on said property, etc. Right. So we're getting away from sidewalk vending, but I mean, you can't just pop up on private property any given type of business.
Right. And there may be probable cause in that situation. If you had an oil change business set up in the Kmart parking lot, it's not zoned for that. That one's easy. Well,
that's my point. Now, and in back to the sidewalk piece of this, one of the things I think we're getting lost in is that, these example ordinances and what you talked about, 25 square feet, as a potential maximum size, and where, because the state has set this standard that you can't require a food permit for something that small if it's selling prepackaged stuff. So it's like the minute you throw a pop-up tent up, we either want to specifically allow something larger, or to say that the minute you throw a pop-up tent, you're not in this category. you're in a business category. You're not a sidewalk vendor, because none of our sidewalks are going to hold a pop-up tent unless they're at least 10 feet wide. And so in terms of the guidance to you, I mean, A, for me, I think I'm hearing none of us considers this an urgent situation. But I for one, would like to see it's something that you do address and that staff address in the future, but it's not my number one priority for the use of staff time for myself. We're not even the number two or number three priority, right? But it is something I think we should address at some point. And I think in that sense, we here should talk about, size and the nature and particular locations where we don't want sidewalk vendors. For example, within 500 feet of a special event. Do we, and what about in city parks? Is that to say that do we want people setting up in city parks? Is there a reason to not allow that? And certainly, again, if Kiwanis has rented out the park, if the Pride Festival or the Wine Festival has rented out the park, people trying to say, aha, there's going to be hundreds of people here, this is a great place for me to set up on the periphery. To me, again, that's a special event, and you have a space, a zone around that in which you don't allow this type of activity, but that you do allow it, elsewhere in the city, unless there's a reason not to, and that sort of thing. And I just think as a realistic matter, though, none of these people are getting permits. And we can have we can develop the ordinance, but if the permits cost too much, either in terms of the permitting fee, and I didn't see you address anything in the state rules about the size of a permitting fee, but you know, just the insurance policy, and the regular business license are all costs that most of these vendors are going to shy away from.
Understood. And the requirement of a business license is something that is imposed locally. It's something that the city imposes. So hypothetically, if you wanted to exempt certain types of businesses from having to obtain a business license, that would be an opportunity if you realize no one's going to get them. They're really not conducting enough business. But it's hard to draw those lines, I think. It's hard to figure out which business is deserving of regulation, which is not. But those are the policy calls that a council gets to make.
But you could exempt business, you know, stands operated by minors, ones that do less than $100 of business in a day or something or whatever.
Correct.
Got it. All right. Thank you. Looking for guidance ideas from colleagues here.
Sure. Just wanted to check, can a business even get a business license if they don't have a fixed location?
Absolutely. You can be an out-of-town vendor for that very purpose if you don't have a fixed location here, but you are doing business here. And there is also part of our code that allows exemption for minors and that type that have a very minimal, like we talked about the lemonade stand, that type of thing, they would be exempt in our code currently.
Okay. Yeah. Because where I'm coming from, I'm with the mayor on this being something that's not real top on my priority list. I absolutely, given the complexity of what we're talking about and the traditions and not wanting to mess up, you know, a useful pathway of entrepreneurship for folks who don't have access to capital, at the same time not wanting to have, you know, chaos and health issues in the community. I think it's really important that we have community conversations. This is going to, if we do this right, this is a number of workshops with folks and some real structuring of what are the decisions and questions that we want input on. So, you know, the size, location, the timing around events, how the parks and sidewalks and plazas and different spaces that are involved. All of those things I've asked about are the practical levels of clarity that we're going to need so that people would know, you know, what would be allowed, what wouldn't be allowed, or where do we need to have some carve out so that this thing is, so that we prevent the big stuff without driving everybody nuts, you know, and keeping people from selling grandma's cookies at soccer games or whatever. and those, you know, perfectly normal things that people do and wouldn't think that they would need permission for. So, you know, every bake sale that everybody ever did. So I, you know, I'm inclined to suggest that this is something that should not be undertaken until after we've got the general plan update in the bag, because that's, you know, it has taken a lot of staff time and a lot of focus on the public engagement of that process. And that's a real priority. Maybe we circle back to this in January and put it in our priorities. But I want to see some serious public discussion so that we don't create a problem, you know, with, you know, unexpectedly.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Newsom.
Thank you. I think that this topic is pretty broad and it's going to be challenging to enforce. I think that we are tasked with being respectful in our community, but also understanding that there is, on occasion, issues that come about. And I think going forward that our staff is somewhat fixed on where they're utilizing their time. And that going forward, our approach probably is staying along the lines of contacting the public health department on issues residence or something sets up shop in a closed parking lot. So I don't think it's something that a ordinance can be drafted tonight.
Comments on my left?
Yeah, if it's not being a major issue and we're not having a wide response, we don't have the resources to go and check, we're not going and demanding papers from street vendors, I don't really think that that's necessary. I also think that if we, Councilwoman Newsom said, the main issue is making sure that we're safe and the community's safe. And if we have issues that arise, whereas something is observationally a massive line down a sidewalk, or it's witnessed that's unsafe food handling, and then maybe pursue it then. But I think at this time, I'm willing to backburn this thing for a while, maybe indefinitely, if it doesn't become a larger problem. I'm generally a fan of people following the law. And so if people aren't following the law and not getting the correct permits, we're not going to be able to do anything about it if we're not going to enforce it. And I don't think we have the resources to track down every single person who opens a fruit stand, nor that I think it's necessary. But anyway, I think it's just at this point, you know, wait, see if it becomes a bigger issue.
Yeah, I'll agree with most of what was said, or almost all everything that was said. I don't think there's any urgency to have anything done right away. So this can be delayed as needed. I do think health and safety is important. And I, you know, this is one of those things that could potentially at some point get out of hand. Excuse me. I've seen other cities where one street vendor pops up and it's a vibrant location. And then you've got literally dozens, not anywhere in our county that I'm aware of, but there's one city in particular where I saw it. I couldn't believe it when I drove by it. So, I mean, not that I'm worried about that being here, but I think it's something that needs to be addressed to some capacity. Learning tonight the ability that we have to actually enforce it, the probable cause part really kind of threw me. Didn't think about that part. But if there's something that we can do that we can at least control it to some degree and have specific locations. If the ordinance simply said that here's an area or specific streets that it's absolutely a no-go, and if somebody pops up, then you can go in and address it. There's your probable cause. They're not allowed to be there, I guess. But stuff like that. But making it too complicated, I think, is a lot of time spent for something that can't be enforced. But I think it needs to be addressed in some capacity at some point.
I think, you know, none of us are in a rush here because we don't see a particular problem and we don't like to, you know, create solutions in search of a problem. But I will say that I would, you know, maybe towards the end of the year, or maybe we discuss it in our next strategic planning session, but there are two things that do concern me. One is physical blockages. And that, you know, maybe we don't worry about so much regulating these businesses as just to say what is not allowed. You know, you're not allowed to block sidewalks. You know, you must allow at least a minimum of X amount of space for people to get by. And you're not allowed to set up a sidewalk vendor within certain spaces, like around special events, that sort of thing. That is where you see. So instead of trying to write all the rules for what kinds of businesses and this and that, just simply state that you know you can't block sidewalks and you can't set up shop within a certain range of special events or certain locations, you know, and that might be a more simple way, because the fact of the matter is we can write something like this up and most people, they're not going to get a license and they're not going to, you know, they're not going to get a business license, they're not going to get a vendor permit, they're not going to get an insurance policy. And unless we want to be hard-nosed, there's really not a point in spending a lot of time writing an ordinance that contains those provisions. But there might be a point in saying, hey, you know, you can't do it in these areas. And if you set up shop in these areas, the police can come and tell you to, you can't be here. You know, you just can't be here doing this commercial activity in this location, and tell them they got to move along. So that would be my thought. I mean, there's no rush, but that's where I would see as a practical matter, kind of minimal regulation, but clear in terms of what you can't do.
I'd be okay with it putting on strategic planning next year.
Okay. So maybe we defer the discussion until January or February.
Thank you, Council. That's a great discussion on it. Gives me some idea of where this might go if the Council decides to do it, but it sounds more like a light touch, if anything, will be where the Council wants to go in the future.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And that, we are going to move on to Council announcements and committee reports, and I'll start on my right with Councilmember Newsom.
Thank you. SLOCOG had a special meeting this past week. The board met and approved the allocation of costs of the ballot measure, and of which will be paid by SLOCOG, and then it moved on the San Luis Obispo Board of Supervisors for approval.
And the Board of Supervisors did vote to approve, so that will be on the ballot?
That is correct.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you. Councilmember Funk?
I have participated happily in lots of community events, but including Atascadero Pride and the Winemakers Dinner and Wine Festival and all kinds of other wonderful community things, but no formal events on my assigned committees since last session.
Okay, thank you. I attended IWMA, Integrated Waste Management Authority meeting, adopted a budget for the next year. We set a singular rate of 2.1% for both commercial and residential customers throughout the county, throughout the county. And so that's a significant, another reduction in fee. And also met with Central Coast Community Energy, nothing real big to report there. And the county mayor's meeting is this Friday in Arroyo Grande.
Thank you, Mayor. Well, I attended two very fun events this past week. Last 2 weeks, I guess. One was the Wine Festival. I volunteered at that, so that was fun. Seemed like it was a pretty good turnout. Weather was perfect. And then last weekend was the Kiwanis Winemakers Dinner. I'm not at liberty at this point, because money's still trickling in, to say how much we raised, but we did very good. It was comparable to what we did last year, so I'm very satisfied with that. And with that, I do need to apologize to my colleagues on the Air Pollution Control District and CAPSLO. My workload was heavier than I thought, and I absolutely missed these meetings accidentally. So I was supposed to be there and didn't talk to some of the members. And thankfully, I didn't cause any issues with that. But I apologize to them, and I won't miss the next meetings. Thank you.
Yeah, lots of fun events. It's been a great summer kickoff. The weather has been beautiful in Atascadero, great place to live. Although, you know, we joke about it. We were happy to support the Kiwanis on Friday at the Winemakers Dinner. And we're looking forward to getting out this Friday at the A-Town Get Down. Starting at 5, downtown businesses will be hosting a variety of pop-ups, family fun, food trucks, sidewalk sales. Those sidewalk sales will be happening on Friday night. I'll be happy to use my money downtown. Our downtown could use everybody's patronage on a daily, weekly basis. There's been a lot of ribbon cuttings that we've been invited to from the Chamber of Commerce, and it's really encouraging to see these businesses open up and be welcomed in the community. The next ribbon cutting will be Binks Coffee at 4:30 before the A-Town Get Down, so come on down Friday night.
Representative, did you have a follow-up?
Just something I wanted to add. Speaking of ribbon cuttings, it's exciting to see station number one coming down. Things are happening. It's going to be really exciting to see that building built. So congratulations to all you guys and to the city for this is going to be a really awesome project that's going to get done. So happy to be a part of that and to see it actually finally happening. This is great. So awesome.
All right. Thank you. Does any council member have an individual determination?
Perhaps more of a question to staff than that, but relative to the public safety thing, there's been a lot of public interest about bricks, and I wonder if there's any update on whether any bricks from that might be salvageable and available. Do we know yet?
So we don't exactly. The contractor is some of the facade was coming down today and will continue to come down. They are going to be delivering some bricks over to us for us to evaluate for what will be available. Unfortunately, that comes in chunks, and we don't have anybody, and we haven't onboarded because it's very expensive for the mortar or any of that to be removed. So we need to, once we see what they're able to deliver for us, determine what availability there is then to make that available to the public. So the answer remains unknown until we have a better idea of how that could be accessible and then how we could make that available to the public if possible.
Great. Thanks for the explanation.
Might be a bring your own sledgehammer situation. Yeah.
It might.
All right. Well, thank you all. And we will call this meeting adjourned. And speaking of summer, though, Councilmember Peake, you mentioned in July, we only have one meeting.
At this time, we conclude tonight's broadcast of the Atascadero City Council meeting. And we invite you to join the City of Atascadero for their council meetings the second and fourth Tuesday of each month. We now join our regularly scheduled program in progress. You're listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL, Paso Robles, Atascadero, and Templeton.
Solutions for real people.
As trends and technology has evolved over time, local radio has remained one of the most effective ways to reach people. 92% of Americans listen to local radio daily. Radio is a companion that reaches people at work, home, and while they're mobile. For advertisers, local radio is cost-effective and is one of the best ways to connect with customers in their local communities. It's simple. Radio is the right choice. KPRL, AM 1230, 99.3 FM.
I am Central Coast Attorney Dave Duringer, and I believe in faith, family, and freedom. Without faith and family, there is no freedom. So the mission of my law firm, Protective Law Corporation in Morro Bay, is to help families grow family power by transmitting life, fortune, and honor to descendants.
Defensive handgun training under time pressure. My free course at guntrust.org, partially funded by proceeds of my federal case against Morro Bay and two police chiefs, is also an advanced estate planning seminar, including the latest on taxes, guns, homeschooling, values transmission, and for blended families, how not to disinherit your kids.
If you are serious about asset protection and family protection, call me, Dave Duringer of Protective Law Corp in Morro Bay. Dial 805-225-5105, or just click on my phone number at lawnews.tv. Again, lawnews.tv, lawnews.tv.
When it comes to sustainable energy systems and service, Central Coast residents trust Solarponics. Marilyn from Templeton says, quote, Solarponics installed our system almost 20 years ago. There are occasions when your system needs to be serviced. With Solarponics, work is completed quickly with knowledge and skill. This is as important a part of a solar company as the original installation. Thank you, Marilyn, for your Google review. When we install a sustainable energy system, we're installing a lifetime of as important service. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
Attention Central Coast homeowners. Is your water heater over 7 years old? If so, replace it with a heat pump water heater before it fails and save thousands in energy costs. Plus, new rebates cover up to 80% of the cost. Call or click to get a free, no-hassle quote today. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
This hour of Lars Larson brought to you by Seniors Helping Seniors. Call 805-369-2110 or at seniorcareslo.com.
Follow the Lars Larson Show on X at Lars Larson Show. You never know what he'll post. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Hey, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. So it turns out that the public opinion polls show that about one-third of young Americans say they are not proud to be American. Is college teaching kids to hate America? Gregory Lykov joins us now, who's a campus reform correspondent. Gregory, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me on.
Hey, before I put any kind of color on it myself, because I've got my own opinions on this,
What in the world is going on there that a third, at least a third, of young people are saying, I'm not at all proud to be an American? What is happening?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. We are seeing that the education system is constantly pumping out younger Americans that are more and more ashamed of their Americanness. And we actually saw this trend exacerbated under the Biden administration, where only 18% of young Americans said that they were extremely or very proud to be American, compared to 36% today. So this trend is actually decreasing with the decrease in programs like DEI, critical race theory, frameworks that emphasize America's failures while downplaying the successes of our country. And that's what we have seen upper education really do, continuously downplay our greatness as a country.
Well, so what do we do to fix it? Or is it something that we can fix? And when I say we, I don't necessarily want the government to come in and impose a fix, but what do we have to do to correct this problem? I think people should be proud to be Americans. And if they're unhappy with certain aspects of our country, go ahead, work to fix them. But you don't just throw the whole thing out and say, I'm not proud of America at all. And frankly, I've seen too many interviews, Gregory, with, where people, conservatives, tend to do this. They'll go out, young conservatives, and they'll be talking to college-age young men and women, and they'll say, what do you think about America? And they'll say, I'm not proud of America at all because it's a bad country. And say, okay, what's bad about it? And they look like a deer in the headlights. They can't tell you why they think that. They just say they think that.
Yeah, it starts with education. Everything starts with education. We have to pressure our colleges and universities to stop pushing these narratives. And when we start having a higher education system that promotes American values, then we're going to have those very same students love America. Look, we just saw with the Leadership Institute's campus reform reported on UPenn's America 250 courses. There were 15 courses that are supposed to be in celebration of America's 250th anniversary. However, all of them didn't mention the Bill of Rights, nor major founding father figures like George Washington, for example. Well, we had five of those courses, of those 15, so one-third, mention slavery and immigration and focus on it. We, again, constantly see this trend of higher education focusing on the wrongs of our country while ignoring the principles that made reform in our country possible. And the only way to fix this is by having a higher education system that teaches those very same principles, so we show students that we can actually be a great country even if we had failures in our past.
Well, in fact, Gregory, I'm with you, because the last thing I'd want to see is have America behave the way the old Soviet Union did, where the state could do no wrong. I mean, that especially showed itself during the big meltdown at Chernobyl, because there were all these engineers who knew you can't question the state. If this was a state-designed plant, you can't suggest there's a flaw. I don't want a country where people say, oh, the government can do no wrong, or government agencies can do no wrong, because that's crazy, too. But if you say, yep, we've got our flaws, we've got our faults, but this is the best country on earth, because no other country affords its citizens the God-given rights that America recognizes as part of its founding documents, and no other country affords the kind of freedoms that citizens enjoy here. And if you believe there is a country that affords you better freedoms, name the country. Tell me which one it is.
Yeah, definitely. Look, you bring up Chernobyl. My mother was living in Kiev during Chernobyl.
Was she?
And
wow.
Yeah, and there no one knew what was going on. No one knew the nuclear disaster. We had a state that couldn't admit its faults, and that would be the worst outcome for the United States. The United States should teach our students about the wrongs of history, about the failures of the Western world and all, but we should also promote the values that, again, made reform possible. That is by far the most important thing. And at the end of the day, we're talking about a state like the Soviet Union. The only party that wants to make a state like the Soviet Union in within the United States is the Democrat Party.
I knew where you were going.
It's very ironic, yeah.
Well, isn't that crazy, though? Because I don't understand. I mean, look, I'm probably two or three times as old as you are, Gregory, but I know people are going to say, oh, you're just an old man. Thanks very much, boomer. But the fact is, I just don't get it. And it's funny that most immigrants to this country, no matter where they're coming from, they arrive in America and they say, look at all this opportunity. And what you get from the kids who actually grew up here is, oh, I see nothing good here at all. And I just wish there were a way of inculcating into those young men and women, say, can you see through the eyes of, say, an immigrant who comes to this country legitimately, that this is a country full of freedoms and full of opportunity?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, look, the American dream is that each generation is being left off with a better start. It is given the opportunity to expand the ideals that make America great. But when we have a generation that doesn't understand what those ideals and what those, what those really principles are, when we have an entire generation that either doesn't understand them or doesn't want to abide by them, then we're going to have the American dream also fall. And that is the concern here, that when we have a Americans not understanding what makes our country great, what makes the United States more protective of freedoms than any other country on earth, including countries in the Western world, then Americans are going to be the very ones that are going to crush our country. And it's going to be a very devastating loss.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Gregory, I'm glad for the work you're doing at Campus Reformer as a correspondent. We appreciate you taking the time. And by the way, that was interesting that your mom was living in Kiev. You know, I have to tell you one of my personal pet peeves, Gregory. I hear all these news anchors saying, you have to say it Kiev, not Kiev. And I said, why is that? They say, because that's how people say it in Ukraine. I said, then why don't you call it Ukraina? Because they don't call it Ukraine. They call it Ukraina. When I hear an American news anchor calling it Ukraina, then I'll believe that Kiev is the right way to say it. Gregory Lykov from Campus Reform. Gregory, thank you very much. I appreciate you coming on. By the way, what would happen this summer if you're traveling and you get sick during that trip? Whether you're flying across the country or taking a road trip or heading out with a family, the last thing you want is to be away from home without the medications you rely on. And that's why it makes sense to prepare before you travel. Believe me, I do that every time. And it's one of the reasons I always recommend All Family Pharmacy. Everything is online. So if I already have a prescription, All Family can fill it. If not, I just fill out a short medical form. Believe me, I've done it. It's easy enough even for a talk show host to do it. A doctor reviews the request and writes the prescription. If it's appropriate, your medication ship right to your front door. They offer 400 prescription meds, including antibiotics, allergy meds, emergency inhalers, ivermectin, maintenance meds, NAD+, everything, 400 of them. Get what you need before you actually need it. Because vacations, I can tell you already, are a lot more enjoyable when you have peace of mind. Do this. Go to allfamilypharmacy.com/Lars. That's L-A-R-S. That's allfamilypharmacy.com/Lars. Then use the code Lars10 to save 10% on your order. That's allfamilypharmacy.com/Lars and use the code Lars10. And check us out on Instagram as well.
The Lars Larson Show.
Brought to you by Central Coast Tractor Work, brush removal, grading, trenching, mowing, and more. No job is too small, and remember, they work weekends. Clear tonight and overnight, lows right around 50, sunny mid-80s on Wednesday, 80 sunny Thursday. Weather was brought to you by Central Coast Tractor Work, 805-440-6361.
Gold is at an all-time high. Now is the time to take your scrap gold and turn it into cash or trade it in for new jewelry at Bella Jewel Fine Jewelry in Paso Robles. Take the old or broken bracelets, chains, rings, or trinkets that you never wear and go home with cash in your pocket or get an additional 25% off to use towards a new item. Bella Jewel Fine Jewelry is family-owned and located at 1224 Pine Street in the heart of downtown Paso Robles. Open Wednesday through Saturday. Do you use propane? At Delta Liquid Energy, you can pre-buy your winter propane gallons to lock in your price. Fuel prices fluctuate, so with Delta Liquid Energy, you can take it.